Welcome to the GGB Podcast, where you hear the news about the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we bring Eric Meyerhofer to the phone, the CEO of Gamblet Gaming, to talk about his company's experience with the introduction of skill-based gaming machines to the casino industry. Eric Meyerhofer had a plan when he was the leader of ticket printer Future Logic, a company he co-founded in the 1980s. He saw an opportunity to introduce skill-based gaming to the casino industry and form Gamblet Gaming to accomplish his goals. Gamblet has made a big splash at industry trade shows, and this year followed it up with hot new games that are starting to spread across the Las Vegas Strip and Southern California casinos and beyond. Gamblet games span the spectrum from head-to-head games and other games that are more traditionally player versus house games. He spoke with me from his offices in California in July. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the nation's leading affiliated marketing service for land-based and online casinos. Eric Meyerhofer, thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. Good to talk to you. We've talked a couple of times since you started Gamblet, but we met when you were leading Future Logic, which was kind of a traditional, conventional hardware-software supplier with a few specific products to the industry. But Gamblet is really pushing the envelope of all kinds of gaming. Tell us how that transition came about.
Yeah, sure. Idea spawned for us for forming the company. I co-founded it with Miles Arnone. As a function of walking around the 2009 G2E show, and our observation was, you saw a lot of cabinet innovation, and the slot games themselves, the EGMs, that is, they're very beautiful constructs, but the fundamental game is still pretty much a passive, take a chance, pretty quick game cycle.
Right.
And we saw a gap emerging between what people would like to play, who are more interested in interactive type of experiences, and that would be, we think, people who grew up in the more with the digital video game kind of era. And that's a gap there, that was going to be a missing part for the industry, like a pretty important, not a niche even, really an important fundamental product as time went forward.
Sure. So, do you classify Gamblet your products as skill games? The entire line of products.
I think the term, like, that's the term everybody's using. And yes, indeed, there's skill. There's activity required by the player, some type of aptitude at something to work with our games. So I guess you could call them skill games for sure. I like to think of them more as kind of interactive. Game experiences, but definitely skill of some form does apply. And yes, all our games have a form of skill required.
Okay.
We don't do any just truly passive, chance-only games.
Sure. Okay, so you got started building some of these new games. What were like the first products that really convinced you that the company could be a real disruptor in the gaming industry?
Okay. Right, so that the older generations that play slots and like them are perfectly happy, and that's right now 100% of the electronic game revenue on a floor for the most part.
Sure.
But that is a whole second market that lays literally alongside it, and so I don't believe we disrupt those people from jumping into slot machine play. I don't think they're going to go there anyway. And so for casinos, I think it's going to be very challenging in the forward year. So. But in terms of I think the root of the question was what was like the first game that we thought would be causes to be disruptive. We just put our first games out on floors. We had run focus testing and things on gaming, but you can't really simulate gambling very well.
Right.
So we really need to get it out into the market, which we're now several locations in Las Vegas and outside of Nevada as well. And now we're getting live play experience. The good news I can report, at least for us, is that the first two games out that we've released on the Model G, that's a multiplayer game, they both resonate with players. They like them both.
Right.
And they're different. And it's a different kind of player. Some prefer one over the other, very clearly. So I feel really good. You know, we're kind of batting 1,000 so far.
Sure.
I don't expect that will all continue, but I feel very optimistic about that on our first two games.
Okay. Let me go to those games in just a second, but I want to back up to the disruptor. I really kind of meant that the disruptor on the casino floor itself, because you're asking for space on the floor that has been traditionally allocated to slot machines, and this is a different type of game. Do you see yourself as having to convince slot executives that this is something different?
It depends on the operator. To a very great degree. So there are, I think all operators, for the most part, starting in North America, they've really started to think about the challenge in front of them, because they can look at the numbers. They have the data. They're just not drawing the younger players that are patrons that walk around the floors. So they know that problem's there. Then it comes down to, like, are they satisfied with where they're at? Do they have excess floor space, or are they bumped up against the compact limit or case of tribal? Like, what is the factor? Do they have to remove machines and so on? But there is a very large percentage now of operators, and it's, you know, I think more than half that are now looking to be somewhat experimental with this stuff, because it's going to take a while to figure it out.
Right, certainly.
And yeah, it does take more space, but as everyone knows, I think in the industry, you know, there's kind of dead soldiers on floor, so those things probably go into storage, they scoot some stuff around, and, you know, I don't think it really impacts their bottom line whatsoever. And what we do believe from the data so far we've seen with a large sample base is that We're pulling newfound dollars.
Yeah.
Very clearly, the players are 15 to 20 years younger than
okay.
a slot player.
Great.
On average.
All right, let's talk about these multiplayer games. You know, you've got to have at least one additional player to really start a game. Why did you choose the multiplayer games really as the first entry onto the casino floor?
It's a great question. I think it had as much to do with what we felt was going to be ready first in our own engineering and development process than it was an intention to release that only. We always wanted them to come out in fairly close time frames. We expect tri-stations to start appearing on floors in late July, early August, and we're going to roll those out to most locations right alongside the multiplayer game.
Okay.
So it was just really a function of our engineering bandwidth, if you will, and development.
Well, you must feel a little bit vindicated, because, like I say, you have to have an extra player. People can't just plop down on their own there. But if they're performing, to your satisfaction and the operator's satisfaction, it must have worked. They must be appealing to somebody.
It is. I mean, we've always talked about this. I think we did our last time we got together. The group we're going after, they're usually in groups of friends.
Right.
So you do see individual players sometimes walk up to the table, and it's interesting to watch that. You know, they study it, and I think they want to try it, but they don't have anybody to play with, and so eventually they'll walk on. But there is more than the majority of people walking around are with friends.
Okay.
And so then they'll start toy with it, and then they'll sit down and play together. And then you'll see that odd stranger sometimes walk up, watch for a while, and then they'll jump onto the game with them.
Right, so if there's only two people on a game, you might get two strangers jumping on the other two slots.
Very much so.
Okay.
You see it all the time.
Interesting.
When you watch it.
So how does the house earn money off these multiplayer games? Is there a rake, or is there an actual payback percentage? How does that work?
Yeah, it's fundamentally the prize that they're going to compete for. You know, effectively like an RNG is typical of like a slot in a way.
Right.
So a prize is determined. There is volatility to that. We can adjust that. We adjust the RTP and all these things. We can set that across a range of pays. And then basically that prize is presented
Okay. So I've seen some really impressive games that are not on the floor yet. I was at the NYGA trade show just a few months ago. You know, I was really impressed with a lot of the single player games. When are they going to be ready for the floor? And are you as confident in them as you have been now with the multiplayer games?
Yeah, for sure, and we are. They're going to appear late July, early August, and we have a stream of titles in a pipeline behind that. So we expect to continue to roll those out through the rest of the year and, of course, going forward. A number of projects in development. I am very optimistic. It's going to be a different player, right? Well, firstly, begin with the player who's just walking around on their own, or somebody who's a time-on-device player who wants a solo experience. They're going to be able to find that with the Tri-Station.
Right.
We call it the player games. They're very different, as you pointed out. They're much more video game-ish, I suppose, than they are like the Model G multiplayer. They're simpler games on those tables because the big key thing is competing with people. So that adds the dimension of depth to it. But with the solo player games, they're deeper games, and so they're more immersive experiences.
Sure. Give us some of the titles. I mean, I'm not a video game player myself, but I know some of them are recognizable to people who are.
Yeah, well, starting with the two branded titles we have, it would be Into the Dead, which is a zombie runner survival game.
Okay.
That's very visual. It's a very skillful game. It's fun. And then a game called Catapult King, which is a trebuchet game where you're, you know, knocking out knights and stuff, which are like targets, and
they're
very skillful. A lot of skill required to aim the slingshot well, if you will. And then we have a words game, Lucky Words, a Match 3 game called Smoothie Blast. We have a game called Slice the Cake, which is a fast swiping, action swiping game. And then we have, sixth game. Match 3 Evolution is called.
Okay.
Which is kind of a strategy game of animal play. So that's the first six. And then there's a set of branded titles. We announced Jetpack Joyride at last year's show.
Right.
And you saw that at night.
Right.
That's a large player base. I think they have 14 million active monthly users, if I got that right, today, still on that game. People like it a lot. So it's a brand they're going to recognize. And there's several others we haven't announced yet, but by G2E this year, they'll be out. I think they're going to make quite a splash.
Okay. Now, I saw a new poker game at NYGA, too. Explain how that works.
Yeah. We thought about the fact that, you know, the young players, they aren't just going to be interested in EGM. They would like table games as well. And so the observation there is if you watch them, they're surfing around often looking for tables they can afford. And that's tough because, as you know, there's a lot of overhead with those. And so they're not all that affordable for that young group or that they're willing to commit. So we designed our game with the intention that, you know, with a fast hand cycle and a strong hold for the house, that they can price the table at a point that those people can jump into table gaming as well. And it's a skill game. So it's this hybrid game, just like our surf multiplayer game, the Surface one. But it's live dealer, live cards, and it kind of has sort of a craft fit kind of feel to it.
Uh-huh.
And you'll often see at a show people cheering and stuff. And,
right.
So they play together, and then they play against each other in the same game.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was very impressive. I can't wait to see that, how the players respond to that. So tell me how you balance, I think, which is the real key to these skill games. When you get somebody who is very skilled, you know, they kind of expect to win most of the time, as opposed to the unskilled player who obviously is not going to win most of the time. And you've got to create this balance. I mean, can that really be done to satisfy both those varieties of player?
We believe so. We spend a lot of time on that. And the reason it works is, you know, we haven't built a chess-style game where it's only skill. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have only chance games, like a dice game, for instance. That's all that you're doing is throwing dice or drawing a card or something. It's how you hybridize the game.
Uh-huh.
So I always look at something like poker. Just poker is really quite a grand construct because it's perfectly hybridized, where the luck of the cards for you will definitely give you an edge. And yet, it's very skillful, but that hybridization guarantees that it isn't just the very best who always wins.
Right.
You know? So that's the art form, is getting that balance right. We do a lot of testing on that to get that balance right, where, yes, the skillful player generally will do better, but not on every night.
Right.
And so a skillful player can have a lucky night. If they're average skill, they can outperform the most skillful player.
Okay.
Just depending on the kind of luck and draw that night, you know?
Right. Well, I always compare it to, you know, the skill slot game that's on the floor right now, video poker. You know, there are people that know the pay tables very well, that can really figure out the bonuses that are out there and know when it turns in their favor. Is there going to be something like that in the skill game arena where the skill game players will understand when is the best time to play? Right.
So I don't know if it quite fits that, but I understand what you mean by your analogy to video poker. I do think we share a lot of common aspects of that from the overall hybridization methods. But you won't know walking up to it. Like, you know, let's put it this way. You're going to know what to expect, especially if it's a licensed title that you've played on your phone before, like those first two games I mentioned earlier. You're going to know what to expect. You can perform pretty well with it, and then you'll get the feel as the game plays. Like, is the game being kind to you that night in terms of, like, prize awards and
right.
things like that? Because you actually earn your way into those with the skill.
And sure.
The better you perform, the more shots you get at it.
Right. Okay.
Looking to acquire valuable players for your online casino or even your land-based property? Check out iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for legal online gaming in the U.S. iGamingPlayer is one of the first and only online affiliate marketing sites licensed in New Jersey. iGamingPlayer delivers quality customers and profitable players with its mix of online gaming news, play for free games, and information on the best promotions offered by its partner online casinos, poker rooms, and land-based casinos. iGamingPlayer uses the vast knowledge about players and their behaviors to deliver players to your online casino and act as the bridge to your bricks and mortar property. So visit iGamingPlayer.com to see what you've been missing.
So you mentioned about, you know, how the slot executives are looking at these skill games. You know, there certainly are some real progressive slot executives like Melissa Price at Caesars who is really committed to it. I was on a G2E panel in New York last week with Chris Downey from the Tropicana in Atlantic City. He's definitely committed to putting skill games on the floor and leaving them there. When they're looking at them, I mean, do they look at them as a traditional slot machine and, you know, they need to pay off, they need to profit this much, you know, per day on the floor, or do they understand it's a different variety and they gotta come up with a different parameter to really evaluate what's going on?
It's the latter. For the more progressive executives and the ones that want to learn about the space, they recognize a couple things. One is they're going to have to evaluate it in a different class, right? And this only works if it's newfound revenue.
Right.
Like, if it was the slot players going on to our games, then you haven't done anything new for the casino, for their benefit, for their investment. No, this is assuming new dollars, you're talking about a whole new market, and as everybody knows, that next generation up, they have very different buying habits, for lack of a better way to say it. So there's really a new kind of metric you're going to have to establish, right?
Right.
Player quality, player time on property, the player experience is so important because if they can make that fun for them, they might tend to hang out and spend in other places of property as well.
Sure.
But that all being said, we believe we're on a pretty solid footing now to have a trajectory. We think similar, you know, as I've talked to executives about it, similar to the ETG trajectory,
sure.
The electronic table game.
Right.
First day out, they got the, you know, strong compared to slots per se. And then, you know, they've continued to modify and enhance, but now they're just a real solid fixture on the floor.
Right.
We believe we're going to be on the same same exact kind of trajectory. I think we'll be on a more attenuated schedule because the player is a whole new thing. You can't really find anything like it on the floor, right?
Right.
So, you know, we think there'll be a progression there. And the executives that are the early adopters here are fully cognizant of this, and they recognize it'll take time to figure out where on the floor, you know, the signage, like all the stuff that's going to be needed to basically make this work, right?
Right. And so they understand that, you know, the decisions per minute, you know, where a traditional slot is maybe 8 or 9 spins per minute, you know, with a skill game, it may only be 1.5, and they're comfortable with that?
Yeah, well, look, it comes down to how the game makes its money, right? So if you look at a gambling game, for instance, our $20 runway for a player is probably going to end up being 3 times the runway that you'd have on a traditional slot game.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely getting more value for the money in terms of just pure time on device. And we also believe that's important to that younger generation, right? They want value for the money, and they want to be, you know, entertained, even though they do want to gamble on the devices. They want to place wagers and see how they're going to do. That's very important to them. So not just doing it to play a video game.
Right.
But time on device is important to them. If you chew that money up too fast, I don't think it would do as well.
Right.
It might be better economically, but your utilization rate will drop.
Sure.
Right? So for now, we're happy to have high utilization rate, and we'll make our money with a higher utilization rate because you can get a lot of runway, you know. And then we'll evaluate from there and tune and all that. But, yeah, we definitely have a longer game cycle. We're probably 45 seconds up to a minute and a half for a game cycle.
Okay. Period. And also, you know, I guess the slot executives are really considering this incremental revenue, those progressive ones anyway. So this is not, you know, something that's taking away from some of their traditional slot machines. It is adding on to the top of the pile of money that they get from slot machines.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, it just comes down to the age of our player. So we have over 3,000 samples from the field now.
Mm-hmm.
And which I mentioned earlier, we're 15 to 20 years younger on average for our player. And it aligns perfectly with the change of the visitation demographic data that's out there. It's perfect alignment, and that's where our market is. And it's not crossing slot players and competing with it.
So
since the penetration rate into that group by slots is so low by AGA studies and other studies, that we're not... This is new money.
Sure.
It's a whole new player, and it's a way to engage them on the casino floor. Otherwise, they would walk right through that floor.
Right.
They just wouldn't find anything they really fascinated in and dabble in a couple things and out. This gives them stuff where they can play. We get some play sessions that go for multiple hours, literally, as people are cheering, and they have a good time playing it. So the player experience is unbelievable, and player value to that value to the casinos is highly cherished, in addition to the fact that, you know, new revenue.
Sure. So, do you have an estimate of how much carded play you're getting, people who are members of the slot club versus uncarded play?
Well, we haven't turned on the switch yet on carded play.
Okay.
Coming in Q3, late Q3 and into Q4, and then we'll be able to answer that.
Okay.
We don't have that right now. But I would tell you, observationally, looking at the demographic and the player, I would speculate it's a low percentage of them that are carded.
Okay, great. You know, one of the things, in addition to the products that are so impressive, that has impressed me, is the way you built the team here. The people you brought together, people like Marcus Yoder and Darian Lowenstein, and I just met Carolyn Byne in New York last week, and really some quality people who really understand the industry. And on top of that, you're building this corporate culture. I think that's really different than other gaming manufacturers. Give us your philosophy of hiring people like that and how you're building a corporation.
Yeah. Well, at the outset, I thought that we'd be best, you know, for putting in terms of the creative team, that we'd be best pulling from the games industry and not casino gaming.
Right.
And the reason was, it's not even a quote, think out of the box. It's just I want to come at it from an entirely different angle, the game construct. And then we then started to layer in people with, you know, past casino experience as well for that market. And, you know, that's how we built the team up. But, I believe we have an A team here. Straight up, I couldn't be more pleased with who we've got here. And I think it's showing in just the professionalism and the product quality, which, you know, we spent a lot of painstaking hours tuning it to what we believe is right before putting it out. So very happy about it. My culture philosophy is you know, you got to have an environment where people aren't going to get crucified for getting out in front with an idea. And I often encourage people to do that.
Right.
So just case in point, if our director of compliance can develop the felt table game, I mean, he built a variation of one of the surface table games, but he took it on his own and ran with it.
Uh-huh.
And that is just not going to typically find product development and compliance. But he has the vision, and he's excited about it, and I fully supported it, and we're now going to have that felt table, the third product class, coming out into trial also in late July and into August. See how it does with, you know, table tips, like, how's that going to work? And so it's just an open culture like that where anybody can spawn ideas. You know, I'm not going to beat people over the head if they make a mistake. And
sure.
Worry about their career kind of thing. I don't run that kind of outfit. I never will.
No, and you didn't with your previous company either. Art, just one last question. What can we expect in terms of jurisdictions? I know you're in Nevada and California, if I'm not mistaken, right now. When are you going to expand into the East Coast, New Jersey, and other areas of the U.S.? And then what's your international strategy here?
Sure. Great question. It's, you know, it's phased. Right now we are able to, we were licensed effectively to place games in several jurisdictions, and indeed we're starting to put games in outside of Nevada, as I mentioned. And then we're in the data collection and refinement phase for the company. So we're pulling data, we're refining the offering, right, based on all kinds of stuff we're learning. We're learning quickly, and we're going to adapt these games quickly to meet that kind of market data that's coming in.
Uh-huh.
And then when we get that in good position, you know, you'd expect to see us start rolling out into those broader territories you described. Later in this year, and then definitely through 2018, and continue to go from there. That's North America, right?
Sure.
Internationally, interesting because we've continued to get, and we've had it for about a year now, a tremendous amount of inbound interest from international operators, even more than a year, and they're facing the same challenge, right? They've got a shifting demographic, they can't seem to interest them as much in the traditional equipment and so on. And so we're, you know, in discussion with some companies to partner with to do that, because, you know, we just can't eat the whole elephant. Obviously a big industry globally.
Sure.
And so I expect to see us starting to get a footprint there into, you know, starting in Q1 of 2018, and we do have, you know, defined plans on how to do that, and then looking into other markets as we go through the forward years.
Great. Well, Eric, congratulations on at least the start of this company. You've done a great job getting it on the floor and getting some good response. We're looking forward to G2E this year. I know you're going to be introducing a lot of new products, and I'm really salivating to see what kind of products you're going to be bringing in to attract this new customer. So thanks for the time, and let's talk again at G2E.
Yeah, I look forward to it, and I know you're going to enjoy our booth.
Great.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast, sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB Podcast, and don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.